Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser Hamid is on special assignment. This is podcast number 506, May 29th, 2010. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by the donation button. The donation button is located on the front page of the F1 Weekly website. Check it out. Click on it. Donate. You know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. On today's program, Monaco is still the crown jewel of Formula One. Hamilton should simply shut up. Paul DiResta has a bumpy ride. And how about them Pirellis, huh? And of course, we might have a little bit of a surprise, some commentary later on in the program from a special someone. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers. After that, fantastic.
Yep. It's a beautiful day in Monaco. Gorgeous, actually. I mean, it's hot.
The whole weekend has just been, it's like...
It's Southern
tourist
France.
Tourist bureaus going, yes!
Exactly. It's, it's the best part of that whole area. This is why people with money live there, Steve.
Exactly.
It's just wonderful. I've been looking forward to this race, especially after Barcelona. I like these back-to-back races. It's going to be great. Of course, they go to Canada after this.
Which should turn out to be an interesting race, considering, this is where the whole soft tire concept was born.
Exactly. So, and I am disappointed that I'm not going to be able to go to Canada. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But still, very exciting stuff. Anyway, let's go right to the Monaco qualifying of yesterday. Of course, Nico Rosberg and Vitantonio Liuzzi crashed. And Nico crashed coming out of the tunnel.
Just missed the barriers. I actually think they ended up taking out the speed bumps that were there. But I think it's the speed bumps that kicked him away from the tire barrier.
That's very possible. That one bump coming out of the swimming pool is I think it's problematic.
Yeah, the Nouveau chicane, and it's just a kind of crazy spot, really dangerous, as we'll find out later. Big question as to whether or not they're going to be able to get Nico's car together in time.
Yes, exactly. Q1 starts. The mechanics are still working on it. And really, the biggest thing at Monaco, even though a lot of people sort of languish in the garage at other Grand Prix, here, anything could happen. You could have a red flag. Somebody's going to crash. So you need to get your lap banked in as soon as possible.
Unlike other tracks, a wreck on this track... almost always, if it's of any consequence, causes a red flag because they have to crane the car off the track because it's
But on the other hand, this is some of the fastest car removal teams I've ever seen.
Frankly, this is the best crew of track workers in all of Formula One. There was one point where it's like, hey, are they going to... taking a yellow flag? Wait, they're going to slow these guys down. The guy wrecked. And by they're 5 seconds away. It's like...
the car is already gone.
Exactly. They're whipping through the car.
I mean, the camera didn't even catch them move the car.
Exactly.
It was so gone. So, yes, you're absolutely right. They do a really great job here.
Yeah, fantastic group.
It's just superb. But like you said, also the other thing is HRT, 107% rule.
Big question mark as to whether or not they're going to be allowed to race. We're going to find out something a little bit interesting here because, we're into this first session. And funny, the two HRTs aren't taking the track.
And also, we have softs and super softs here.
Yeah, and it's very interesting to see how the softs are lasting longer than the mediums did in Barcelona.
Yes. it is a short... it's only 2.1 miles...
And it's really not so much that. It's the fact that there are really no high-speed corners. So you're really not, you know, they were talking about this during the quali race. And it's like, these cars aren't putting as much side load on these tires as they do at any other track. And that's why the softs last so long. And they can use the super softs as the option.
But still, let's go right to it. Q1. They do get Nico out. Which Antonio Liuzzi doesn't go out because his car is still being worked on. And McLaren is looking very strong all weekend. They could be the ones to beat here in Monaco.
Yeah, good-looking car, good-looking. They've been putting up good times. The Mercedes has looked pretty racy in practice, too.
Not bad, I have to admit. But still, I thought McLaren had a really good chance at getting pole from watching practice. Fernando looking good.
Yeah, the Ferrari was looking pretty racy. The one team that was really kind of a disappointment because we expected them to be challenging at the top was Renault.
A huge disappointment, and we'll get to that in a minute, because Robert Kubica was on the front row, as I said in the previous podcast.
Last year.
And the Renault seems to be a good car at this track with the correct driver, Steve.
Yeah, well, it comes down to that the Renault is one of the better cars in the corners. It corners better. They can keep better speed. You know, they're faster in the slower parts of the track. And I guess you need a rally talent to take advantage of that.
Exactly.
So, end of the first session, we have out Kovalainen, truly in the two Renaults in 18-19. Augustwari, Glock, and D'Ambrosio. Neither HRT Cosworth set times. I think this was actually strategy by HRT because they knew that if they put Karthikeyan on track, he would not be able to get 107%. And they were going to basically appeal using practice times to give them a better chance of actually getting through.
Right. And they save a lot of tires.
Not that it helps them any.
I know, but still it sounds great.
Too bad
great.
They couldn't like sell their allocation to somebody.
Absolutely. Also, that's what really needs to be mentioned is when they did finish Nico Rosberg's car in the middle of the session, he just banged out one fast lap and he went right up to P5.
Yeah.
It was very impressive while Schumacher was in P9.
Exactly. And the other issue too for them was it kind of threw everybody's strategy off because a lot of people were not going to use hard tires in that first session because they didn't have to worry about being number 18. Because Nico wasn't going to go. He was going to be, you know, the odd car out of the normal six. So that kind of screwed up a lot of people because, you know, some people with decent times on hard tires, but as soon as Rosberg jumps to five, all bets are off and people are in for soft tires because they want to get out of Q2.
Absolutely. And Toro Rosso on the super softs hoping to get to Q2 as well. Jaime Alguersuari not having a great weekend, where Sebastian Buemi goes right up to P7. At the end of Q1. 5 minutes left in the session. Sergio Perez goes to P6 from P17, which was very impressive.
Yeah, the Sauber is working well. I really can't say much more about it than that.
Let's go to Q2, Steve.
So Q2, who's out first, Clark?
Out first in Q2? Not sure, but Felipe Massa is not having a great day.
No, he's not the only one, but Philippe, I don't know what it is, if it's in his head or if he's just having horrendous luck
so
far this season.
He's having a hard time with the car. He's making mistakes, especially at the exit of the swimming pool section. And right, like you said just a few minutes ago, the biggest disappointment is Renault. Eric Boullier, and you know, this is what happens when you have your expectations are a little bit too high.
Yeah.
This is pathetic. I think Renault, the car itself, has the potential, but
I don't know what it is. Heidfeld just languishing in this session. It's like, what, you can't put in a good lap?
Yeah, Vitaly Petrov is outdoing him again.
Yeah, and by a pretty significant, it's more than a second, so close to a second. It's like, Nicky, come on, program.
Yeah, halfway through the session, it's Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel, Jenson Button, Fernando Alonso, Mark Webber, Nico Rosberg, Michael Schumacher, Felipe Massa, Rubinho, and Pastor Maldonado doing a much better job than in the past. He's finally sticking around Rubinho.
Yeah, the Williams seems to be performing quite well this weekend, and you know, I don't know if it's because it's got the good low end or what, but they're looking competitive this week instead of, you know, kind of languishing at the back of the, you know, at the low end of the Q2 spectrum.
Renault once again doesn't even get out of Q2, and I was just blown away. I mean, after what Eric Boullier has said, I expected them, you know, maybe at least to be in the top 10.
Yeah, well, you expect them both to at least be challenging, and they're not really, because even as close as they are, Petrov is still 0.3 out of getting past or getting into the final session, and Nick's, you know, more than a second. It's like, was Nick trying to save tires and running on hards the whole time, or what?
And Pastor Maldonado does what he needs to do. He does out-qualify Rubinho.
Yeah, and about time. So out in the session, Vitaly will start in 11th, Rubens in 12th, Kumui Kobayashi in 13th, DiResta in 14th, Sutil in 15th, Heidfeld in 16th, and Buemi out in 17th. Buemi didn't really have a very good session. I'm not sure what was going on there, because he only bettered his time by like 0.05 or 0.05 of a second. It's like,
but at least he got into Q2, where Jaime Alguersuari did not.
Exactly.
So there you have it. And of course, Sergio Perez doing an outstanding job at Sauber. Q3, Michael Schumacher comes out first with 6:30 to go. Jenson Button, fastest in all sector with a 1:13.997. Then Sebastian Vettel, fastest in sector 1, 2, and 3, goes to P1. Lewis Hamilton finally goes out. Not sure what was going on there. There was some work being done to the car. Saves a set of super softs. 3 minutes to go. Lewis Hamilton, and not a happy man with Felipe Massa. And it's not really Felipe's fault. And this is going to be the beginning of the end for Lewis Hamilton's weekend.
Yeah, it really is kind of the start of the ball rolling for him.
The penalties start getting divvied out, and they just don't stop.
No, and frankly, I didn't really see any that he didn't really deserve.
So I agree.
I agree,
but still, he thought that Felipe Massa blocked him in the qualifying session. The stewards disagreed completely.
Yeah, certainly didn't penalize anybody. And it really hurts him because he ends up not setting a time in the session, which is kind of rough. As we see, there's a reason for that.
Two minutes and 30 seconds. Sergio Perez has a huge, huge crash. The clock is really stopped at 2:26. And we do have a red flag.
Red flag. Sergio Perez coming out of the tunnel. We've been noticing that there's a bit of a washboard with the new pavement coming out of the tunnel. Looks like it kicks out Sergio's rear end. He's into the guardrail, slides along the track, bam, into the tire barrier at the end of the chicane. Solid, almost perfectly perpendicular to the side, to the barrier on the side of the car. Not a pretty accident. We're looking at, we're hoping he's okay.
Well, it's one of those barriers that gives and disperses a lot of the energy. You do see Sergio's head go back and forth a little bit. But to be honest with you, I was surprised that when the medical team got there and the ambulance, it took a while
to get him out of the car.
Absolutely.
We did see in the replays that Sergio basically got his hands away from the wheel and got them up to the sides of his head, which basically tells me he's basically filling that gap between his helmet and the padding to make sure that, you know, minimize this, you know.
And somewhat reactionary.
But they eventually get him out of the car. Took him, almost 20 minutes to free him from the car. And then after that, we're looking at another 20 minutes for the crew to get out there and reset the barrier. And then finally, we get ready to go. And, of course, let me see. Let's everybody go out with 2 minutes to go. So.
Yeah, and it restarted at the 3:35 Monaco time. And of course, and away we go. Lewis Hamilton waiting for the green light at the queue. 2 minutes. I thought he got there a little too early because he had to wait for almost 2 minutes or more. And I thought maybe that wasn't the smartest thing in the world. You know, they just sit there and just get hot and your tires are getting cold.
Yeah, double whammy in that you're overheating your engine. And by the time you get to go, you've lost all of the tire warmer heat. that you had in the tires.
But no damage done. And of course, once again, nothing's changed here, Steven.
No. I wonder who's on pole. Sebastian Vettel.
And Vettel is, you know, this could be the...
And this was a lap he set before Sergio's accident.
Yes, exactly.
When he goes back out, he's out there, I think, to create traffic more than anything.
No, he pounds in a lap that's a half a second faster than Jenson Button. And he realizes, you know what? Once again, try and beat me.
Yeah, somebody catch me. Come on.
It's pretty impressive what this young man has been able to do. But there you have it. Yeah, Sebastian Vettel, Jenson Button on the front row. Take it away, Steven.
Mark Webber will share the second row with Fernando Alonso, Michael Schumacher and Felipe Massa on the third row, Nico Rosberg and Pastor Maldonado on the fourth row, and Lewis Hamilton on the fifth row. Everybody else will bump up, so Louis is going to have Vitaly Petrov beside him.
And Louis took a two-grid penalty for the incident with Felipe Massa.
Oh, he did. That I missed.
Yes, exactly. Because he was originally P7, but then they dropped him down to P9, and that was the beginning of the end.
Uh-huh. That's why it's showing no time.
Exactly. So it's very fascinating, and you've got to love it. The Grand Prix of Monaco. Sebastian Vettel has not won this Grand Prix yet.
Nope.
Of course, Fernando has. Lewis Hamilton has. Jenson Button has.
Michael Schumacher, Garno Trulli.
Yes.
I think it was six previous winners in
probably
the race.
Yes.
Something like that, five or six. Two of them with the opportunity to create history in Michael Schumacher and Fernando Alonso. If they should happen to win this race, they'd be the first drivers ever to win it for three separate teams. Michael Schumacher, should he win it, would tie him with Ayrton Senna for the most wins at Monaco. So, you know, Michael could get a double whammy, but neither of them are really favorites to win this race unless something really goes wrong for somebody at the front of the grid.
Especially when you have Sebastian Vettel on pole.
Yeah, well, and then Jenson Button there with him.
And Jenson Button's been quick all weekend.
Yeah, and we know that Jens is smooth. He's easy on tires. He's probably, you know, he's going to probably make it a challenge.
Absolutely, absolutely. Grand Prix de Monaco. Here we are in Monte Carlo. You gotta love this place. It's unbelievable. Quickly, Sergio Perez is still in the hospital for observation, but he is all right. Like I said before, the Lewis Hamilton thing wasn't for blocking Felipe Massa. That was my mistake. Lewis Hamilton thought that Felipe Massa blocked him, but really, in his final lap, the lap was removed because he cut the chicane.
Oh, yes.
He cut the old chicane, so they put him back to P9. And, of course,
did give him the opportunity to choose his tires, though. And he is going to be is the only one in the top 10 who's going to actually start the race on the softs instead of the super softs.
Correct. The other good thing is that Fernando Alonso is on the clean side of the track. No, actually, he's on the dirty side of the track.
No, he's on the dirty side of the track.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. What am I thinking,
but,
Steve?
But, you know, on this particular track at this point,
it's so narrow.
It's narrow, knowing that, but, you know,
and we've had a number of...
The street sweepers have gone through and gotten rid of a lot of...
And GP2 has already had their sprint race, and, you know, there's some rubber on the track.
It's not as dirty a side of the track as it might be somewhere else.
Yeah, because let's not forget, even though they have practice on Thursday... On Friday, when everybody has a day off, the streets are reopened to the public.
Yeah.
So, you know, the oil and everything else goes back onto the tarmac. So, very interesting stuff. Anyway, also, on the roll-off, when the lights go green, Jenson Button tells his team that his steering is extremely heavy, indicating a possible problem with power steering.
You know, and that's the last we hear of it. So apparently...
Was that a ruse?
A ruse, or maybe for some reason he had just a drop in pressure.
I don't trust anybody.
Hydraulic pressure. Or,
I don't trust anybody, Steven.
Exactly. We know the way people are monitoring the radios these days. So
yeah. Or it could have been some code for something else. So we just don't know. But anyway, the lights go out. Great stop for Sebastian Vettel. Fantastic start for... Fernando Alonso, as usual, goes up to P3. Jenson Button does a good job of holding him off. Michael Schumacher has the worst start I've ever seen.
Well, it's actually the worst start of the year. It was interesting, they were talking about it, that in every race up to this one, He's gained three positions at the start. This was the first one where he actually lost positions.
Apparently, the anti-stall kicked in instead of first gear, and it was he just bogged down.
Yeah.
And it was sort of scary, you know, because...
Well, his teammate just barely misses him.
Yes.
Nico flips his wheel just in time to get past him and around him. It was a little bit scary, right, watching the replay at that point, because... That's one of those points where it's, whoa, there's really nowhere to go.
Exactly. Lewis Hamilton gets passed by Michael Schumacher afterwards, after he gets going again. He's in P10 in the hairpin.
Yeah.
And we see a lot of funky stuff happening in the hairpin, but this is probably the cleanest pass because Lewis Hamilton realized that Schumacher was there and actually gave him the room in a civilized fashion.
Exactly. Let him go by. Rather than, beginning of the race serve anybody to get taken out now.
Now, Lewis Hamilton does tell his team that he thinks that he might have been touched by Michael Schumacher and may have a right rear tire issue. Lap 2, fast lap of the race. Sebastian Vettel with a 1:20.269. Fernando Alonso all over the back of Jenson Button. And we have Sebastian Vettel, Jenson Button, Fernando Alonso, Mark Webber, Nico Rosberg, Felipe Massa, Pastor Maldonado, Vitaly Petrov, Michael Schumacher, and Lewis Hamilton rounding off the top 10. Lap 3, fast lap of the race, Sebastian Vettel. Lap 4, fast lap of the race, Sebastian Vettel. Lap 5 and 6, Lewis Hamilton all over the back of Michael Schumacher. He wants that position back. Lap 8, fast lap of the race, Fernando Alonso. No, first it was Sebastian Vettel, then it was Fernando Alonso. 1:19.327. Michael Schumacher tells his team that his rear tires are graining severely, and you can tell because he's having a hard time fighting off Lewis Hamilton. Lap 10, Lewis Hamilton passes Michael Schumacher into Saint Devote. And fast lap of the race, Fernando Alonso with a 19.262. Lap 11, Fernando Alonso is now closing in on Jenson Button. Rubinho passes Michael Schumacher. Schumacher is having such a hard time that he pits on the following lap, 4 tires on lap 12, and gets a new nose as well, because apparently maybe he did brush up against Lewis.
Yeah,
Hamilton.
I think he had damage to one of the end plates.
Lap 13, Michael Schumacher, after that pit stop and a new nose, is now in P21. Let's not forget, he started P5.
Yeah, that really hurts. Having to take the pit stop early like that. But he'll gain a lot of that back as the rotation continues, but it puts him in a bad spot as far as tires go, because now his won't last as long as everybody else's.
Felipe Massa is trying to get by Nico Rosberg on lap 13. Front wing does touch Nico Rosberg. Felipe Massa and Pastor Maldonado do pass Nico Rosberg, because apparently the Mercedes are graining tires faster than anybody.
For some reason, the Mercedes, they're wiping out the super softs really quick. And as soon as they're gone, they're pretty much easy pickings, because they can't accelerate out of the corners, which is key at Monaco, and maintain their spacing makes it too easy for someone to get up beside them and outbreak them in the next corner.
Lap 15, Jenson Button pits. Nico Rosberg pits as well for a nice set of fresh softs. Lap 16, Sebastian Vettel pits. And to me, it looked like they weren't ready for the pit stop. It's a bit long. We usually see 4.2, 4.3. This is a 6.9 stop. Mark Webber pits. His is a 15.5 second stop and falls to P14. And for the first time this season, the pit crew at Red Bull just didn't look smooth.
It was almost like they thought that they might have the wrong set of tires, because Webber's in on the next lap and everybody's still kind of running around kind of,
what happened really is when they were bringing out Vettel's tires, I believe that a cord got caught somewhere. Mm. And that's why they looked so awkward.
Oh, somebody tripping over a jack.
But Vettel got,
because
there was some question whether Vettel got the right tires. Did he get Mark Webber's tires? Because that would be a rule infringement.
Could be a disqualification.
And so, but in the end, everything was okay. And he just lost a little time. Mark Webber pits, like I said, and his stop was very, very long.
And then they had, on Mark's, they looked like they had trouble with the right rear tire.
Correct.
Couldn't get it off or get it back on. It cost him, basically, It doubled the length. His stop was twice as long as Sebastian Vettel's.
Correct. Lap 17, Fernando Alonso pits, and Jenson Button puts in the fast lap of the race with a 119.072 and now is in the lead. Lap 18, fast lap of the race, Jenson Button, 118.091. Lap 19, 7.5 second lead for Jenson Button over Sebastian Vettel. Heikki Kovalainen pits on that lap, and Paul DeRista pits on lap 20. Lap 21, Lewis Hamilton all over Vitaly Petrov. Lap 22, Lewis Hamilton pits, and...
Again, not ready.
Maybe that day off on Friday, just and they went out nipping bourbon or something.
Something, or they're all in the back of the garage looking out at the bay or something.
Correct. So, Lewis Hamilton, more bad luck, more bad karma. They're not ready. It's a 9.7 stop. He comes out in P14 or 13.
Yeah, it was a brutal stop for him. Actually, 15 just behind Weber.
Thank you very much. Timo Glock cuts the chicane while Nico Rosberg and Michael Schumacher are jousting.
They were dicing it up, dude. Yeah, whoa.
I mean, I thought they were going to hit each other. It was pretty fascinating stuff. Lap 25, Yarno Trulli pits, Jenson Button, 1 second per lap faster than Sebastian Vettel.
Well, he needs to get some gap. Otherwise, when he pits again, because Sebastian theoretically does not need to pit again. He's gone from super softs to softs. He's,
yeah,
by
this,
the rules,
that's theoretical,
ready to go to the end of the
but
race.
But he lapped, his pit stop was on lap 16, Steve. We're only on lap 25 right now, but still, I think you're in a dream world that cannot possibly work.
Ooh, but
I'm just telling you, Steve, no way, Jose. Jenson Button, like I said, is doing a second per lap faster than Monsieur Vettel. Paul DeRista trying to pass Sebastian Buemi at the hairpin. Wasn't quite as smooth as Michael Schumacher on Lewis Hamilton.
No, pretty much...
El contacto with Buemio.
Yeah, el broken wingo on my way to the pitzo.
Yeah, it was a big bummer for Paul DeRista. Just a little bit, as he says, too ambitious. Pastor Maldonado pits. He comes out in P13. Paul DeRista will go in for a new nose. Felipe Massa on lap 26. Pits comes out in P11. And of course, the Paul DeRista pass on Mr. Buemi that cost him some parts off his Force India is being investigated, and he will get a drive-through penalty. Lap 28, Paul DeRista takes his penalty, and now Lewis Hamilton is all over the derriere of Felipe Massa. Petrov pits, very slow to get away, second stop. P13.
Look to me watching the it looked like he missed gear. He came like that close to stalling.
Well, sometimes, you know, I some drivers keep it in first gear and keep the revs up. But some people, because sometimes those wheels will start spinning if there's any clutch drag, some folk put it in first. I mean, they put it in neutral.
Right. And it looked like he was having trouble getting it in the gear because that it was that kind of...
Exactly. Exactly. Lap 31, Lewis Hamilton is all over Felipe Massa. Timo Glock is out with front end damage and parks his version at the swimming pool on lap 32. Now, this is a very interesting moment in the race because I believe McLaren misjudged where he was parked and assumed or thought or hoped.
Expected a safety car.
Absolutely. They expected a safety car. Jenson Button pits right away. And I thought it was too early. And of course, other people think the same thing. Rubinho pits. Paul DeRista pits. It's very interesting. But still, there is no safety car, Steven. Lewis Hamilton now is trying to pass Felipe Massa. They touch. And... I'm telling you, I don't know what's going on with Lewis Hamilton, but on this pass in the hairpin, Lewis Hamilton was nuts trying to do this pass.
No, there was no space.
There was no space, and once you, because your steering is all the way locked,
you're all the way
to get around the hairpin, there's nothing you can do until you get around the hairpin, so you guys are stuck together, and then finally, Lewis Hamilton gets out, damaged Felipe Massa's car. And Felipe Massa, as he's in the tunnel, hits the marbles, crashes into the wall, and his day is done.
Yep, he slides all the way out of the tunnel. Almost, he ended up covered like 10 feet short of getting all the way down to the Nouvelle Chicane.
Now a safety car comes out, Steven.
Yep, now we get the safety car, which is just a tiny bit too late for those that just...
Everybody pits, almost everybody. Almost. And then Michael Schumacher, right before the pit lane entry, has stopped on track. And I wasn't sure what happened.
It looked to me like it died on him because there's some in the camera shot, some wisps of smoke. Something just broke.
Something happened.
Yeah. The announcers are laughing about it because he almost... Because guess who's right behind him?
His friend.
When his car dies, Fernando Alonso.
His buddy.
And he almost dies in the Roscos. It would have been like too much.
The curse of the Roscos.
Exactly.
That's so beautiful. So lap 36, we still have the safety car. Lewis Hamilton tells his team that Felipe Massa turned on him on purpose. Felipe Massa is evil.
It's the hairpin. What do you think he's going to do?
Steve, it's always everybody else's fault.
Yeah, just, and that's...
Don't forget that.
And... Somebody needs to work on him with that because ultimately it's not.
It's not? Anyway, lap 37, we still have a safety car. It's Sebastian Vettel, Jenson Button, Fernando Alonso, Adrian Sutil having a great day, and Kimi Raikkonen is not in this race, so he thinks he might be able to finish.
Yeah, in a good spot.
Yeah, Kamui Kobayashi in fifth, Mark Webber, Lewis Hamilton, Pastor Maldonado, Petrov, and Heidfeld. Lap 38, safety car has been told it's coming in, and the leaders are going through a lot of traffic and backmarkers, excuse me.
Yeah, the one problem with the safety car, you know, they changed this rule 2 years ago, they've changed it back, so now the field just bunches up behind them, they don't let the slow guys go by, so yeah, now you end up with an
interstitial. But this way you get the race going again quickly, of course. The marshals are pretty good. The blue flags start flying pretty quickly.
And the backmarkers have been very good about getting out of the way as soon as there's a spot.
I absolutely agree. On lap 40, Lewis Hamilton and Felipe Massa are now under investigation. Jenson Button is going very quick and closing in on Sebastian Vettel. Lap 41, Lewis Hamilton on the rear end of Mark Webber. The team tells Vettel to keep Jenson Button at bay for at least 10 more laps.
Because he knows, well, they know that Jen's on the super softs. He has yet
to use softs.
So he's going to have to stop. And if Sebastian just hold him back behind him, that's going to be a 20-second gap that he's going to get.
I love it.
Lap 44, Hamilton is in for his drive-through because he was penalized for basically doing exactly the same thing Paul DeRusta did.
Correct.
10 laps earlier.
And he got the same penalty, so all's fair, and there you have it.
Exactly.
Lewis Hamilton pits on lap 42, I believe, for the penalty and comes out in P9, where he started.
Yeah, it's not really necessarily...
Not that bad. No. It could have been much worse.
Exactly. If he'd done that, like the lap after the safety car, it could have been a really big gap that he would have had to make up.
Lap 45, Mark Webber is looking to pass Kamui Kobayashi. Paul DeRusta touches D'Ambrosio in the hairpin.
Yeah, he basically runs up his behind. It's interesting, you go to the shot of DeRusta's car from the driver's point of view, and there's a portion of his front wing kind of flapping.
Yeah,
I thought it was his nose.
Yeah, it was bizarre, but no, Paul DeRusta is not having a great day, especially in the hairpin, and it's just not coming together for him. And even though he's had it's been a great rookie year so far for him, this race is one to forget.
This is one of those ones where he was really wishing he was in a tin top, because both of the times he had his accidents, he would have still been racing if he'd been at a tin top.
So on lap 46, we have Sebastian Vettel, Jenson Button, Fernando Alonso, Adrian Sutil, Kamui Kobayashi, Mark Webber, Pastor Maldonado, Petrov, Hamilton, and Heidfeld. Now the team, McLaren, gets on the phone and tell Jenson Button, you must pass Sebastian Vettel.
And
you must.
Yeah, and frankly, watching Vettel with cars behind him in this race...
Well, and we're in Monaco. Come on.
Exactly. The car's too fast. You can't get close enough to him. And he's being very judicious about the use of his curves to make sure that the one spot where you're going to get the advantage, which is going into the home straight for DRS, you're not going to be able to get enough run up on him to get him before you get to the first corner.
Exactly.
And it's just amazing to watch. With what's coming up, I really wish this race had ended a little differently, because I think it would have been exceptionally exciting.
It would have been. But there you have it, Steven. On lap 48, Jenson Button does pit, comes out next to Sebastian Buemi, and there's a little scuffle there, but he gets through. He's now in P3. Lewis Hamilton pits. Fernando Alonso is looking good as he has used both tires. Fernando Alonso doesn't have to stop either. Sebastian Vettel doesn't have to stop. And Vettel's tires are now getting very old.
Fernando's got something between 15 and 18 less laps on his tires than Vettel. And he's making ground on him very quickly. And it's a little bit amazing to see how fast Button catches up to the two of them. With the new tires.
It is amazing. Lap 50, fast lap of the race, Jenson Button with a 117.8. Lap 51, Jenson Button with a 117.4. And he just catches them so quickly. And for a minute there, I'm thinking Vettel certainly is going to have to stop because these tires can't make it. I think Fernando Alonso will also have to stop. Jenson Button already stopped three times. He's good to go till the end of the race. And I'm looking at this and thinking, you know what? Button's got this one in the bag.
Yeah, well, he's definitely in the catbird seat as far as all of it goes. And now the question becomes is, does Fernando have enough tire to get to the end of the race? And can Sebastian Vettel maybe nurse his tires long enough to finish the race?
Not only that, but Red Bull, if you recall, in Barcelona, commented on how Ferrari is reactionary to their pit stops.
Right.
And they were trying to be a little more sneaky and clever, and I thought that Red Bull should have pitted Fernando Alonso right after Jenson Button pitted, but they didn't. And I thought Red Bull should have pitted Sebastian Vettel right after Jenson Button, and they didn't.
Yeah, well, I think when Button pits, it's too early because what you'd want to do is go back to the super softs, but there'd be too much race left to make those last long enough.
It's nothing but trouble, Steve. One of those. It's just out there theoretically.
Yep.
Jenson Button could have this in the bag. I'm talking to myself. I'm going, wow, these guys, their tires are just too old. They haven't pitted. I couldn't see, after seeing what the Pirellis do, Sebastian Vettel finishing this race knowing that he had pitted on lap 16.
Well, especially when we've seen the softs last 10 laps. It's like, he's going to try to go 60?
Exactly. Fernando Alonso, lap 54, is waving at some back markers. You know, he expects to be treated like royalty. And when you don't...
And frankly, that was completely uncalled for because as soon as that back marker had somewhere to go, he got out of the way.
Exactly. Lap 55, Mark Webber pits again, 4.9 second stop. Very good indeed. Jenson Button is now asking his team, what is going on with Vettel? He's still out there and he hasn't pitted. He's only done one pit stop.
Why hasn't he stopped yet?
Yes. Button is completely bewildered as well as I am because he knows this guy pitted on lap 16. It's lap 57.
Yeah, and basically Button's taken chunks out of Alonso and Vettel. It's amazing how quickly he's pulling up to them. It was like 13... 12, 11. He was basically pulling a second a lap or more each lap closer to those two. And Fernando's right there with Vettel, but he doesn't have enough to get by him. He's one lap, he's 4/10. Next one, he's 7.
Yeah, because
next
his
one,
tires,
he's five,
each lap, you know, those tires go down and down and down. So Fernando Alonso, I was thinking, you know, he has nothing to lose. He's not leading the championship. No. He can attack Sebastian Vettel when he needs to.
Exactly.
And that's what I was hoping that was going to happen, but it didn't. Lap 58, Fernando Alonso now on the back of Sebastian Vettel, really thinking that it's time to attack. Jenson Button is catching the leaders quickly. Lap 62, Sebastian Vettel pitted on lap 16, gentlemen. It's incredible.
It is amazing that these tires are holding out like they are.
Absolutely, and I'm thinking, when is Jenson Button going to try to pass Fernando Alonso? Because Sebastian Vettel is looking in his mirrors, and he's thinking, well, Jenson Button has to deal with Fernando Alonso. Those guys can stay busy while I will just go lap after lap after lap on these worn-out, terrible, grained Pirellis.
Well, I don't know if they're grained. I don't think there's enough rubber left on them to be grading.
Lap 63. Jenson Button is staying all over the back of Fernando Alonso. The team tells Sebastian Vettel, Jenson Button is right behind Fernando, but Fernando will keep him at bay. Lap 64, Sebastian Buemi pits. Fernando Alonso looks on the inside of Vettel, but no cigar.
And frankly, that was about as close.
That's about as close as it got.
Yeah, as he ever got to getting by him. He got up beside him, basically got front tire to rear tire, but he didn't have enough momentum to beat him into Sandoval.
Correct. Adrian Sutil and Kamui Kobayashi on lap 65 touch a bit at Mirabeau. KK goes by. D'Ambrosio pits for Virgin. Mark Webber gets by Adrian Sutil. On lap 67, Fernando Alonso cuts the chicane, but there was no advantage and continues on without having to give way. Lap 69, McLaren expect Sebastian Vettel's tires to fall off about now because, you know, that's all they talk about, the cliff. And when the Pirellis are shot, then it's over with. Yeah. Everybody can pass you and you have no chance of fighting.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, right after, McLaren is hoping that Vettel either crashes or just falls off the wayside, there's carnage.
Well, the leaders come up on this pack of, what, 5-6 cars that are kind of fighting.
They're all
for
together.
Position.
The first car, really, is Adrian Sutil's rear hits the Armco. He
blows out a tire.
The tire, you know, you could see it coming off the rim. But then Vitaly Petrov gets tagged, and he hits the other side of the wall.
Alguersuari gets involved. It was just literally carnage. You're like, well, how's anybody going to get through that?
Exactly. And a little bit of Lewis Hamilton is involved as well with his rear wing.
Yeah.
But it's a complete disaster. But the leaders get through this.
It's amazing because Alguersuari goes hard into the barrier and then back across the track. Petrov goes hard into the barriers, basically bumps the back of Buemi or Alguersuari and then stops. And then suddenly, here come the leaders, kind of threading the needle through all of this
carnage.
And to
be honest with you, I was surprised Lewis Hamilton could continue because the way Jaime Alguersuari hit the back and his nose popped up of Lewis Hamilton, I thought there'd be too much damage back there.
Well, the thing that really blew my mind about Hamilton is that he didn't lose that tire.
I know.
Watching the replay of Alguersuari going into him where he did, I'm like going, that tire's going down.
So there you have it. Lewis Hamilton getting some good luck. I don't care what anybody says. And of course, Vitaly Petrov is stuck in the car. The medical car comes out.
We have the safety car launched, but literally as soon as it hits the track, we have a red flag.
We have a red flag because there's going to be it's going to take a little bit of time to get Vitaly Petrov out of the car because for a moment he was unconscious.
And that actually, no, that turned out to be a false.
It was fake?
Yeah, he was never actually unconscious. Basically, he was just pinned in the car.
Oh, okay. But then, you know, and at post-race conferences and emails, I saw that Vitaly was in pain.
Knee,
thought he
legs
might have broke his ankle. But still, he came out okay.
Yeah, maybe a little bit less worse for wear than still, second time we've seen the ambulance go up the hill to the hospital.
And to be honest with you, I learned a lot during this red flag period. I had no idea that once the cars were parked on the grid during the red flag, that they could get new tires.
Yeah.
I was stunned.
Yeah, that really kind of blew me. Well, not only that, they could be serviced too. Because Lewis Hamilton's rear wing, half of it's basically falling off the car. Literally surprised that he was not black flagged to get that fixed. But it worked out for him because the crew's running out with elements and they're crank and try to get the sucker off.
Well, not only that, but there's only 72. We're in our 72nd lap. Excuse me. There's only 6 laps to go. We do have an excitement with the 3 leaders on when Jenson Button's going to attack because his tires are doing well. And now this has completely changed.
Well, basically eliminates the drama that we were going to get at the end of the race.
Correct. Everybody has new tires.
Yeah.
Which is really, I was not aware of that rule.
Yeah. You know, frankly, you know, they were, the guys on speed were basically going, oh, the race is over. Because back in the day, red flag with that few laps to go, they would have just finished it.
Exactly.
And you know, maybe they may as well have. But there are a couple of people who are glad they didn't because somebody like Mark Webber, who was able to actually improve his position in those last 5 laps, but still, as soon as they can change the tires, the drama's gone because you know that there's really no way they're going to be able to get Vettel.
No, that equaled the playing field so much I couldn't believe it. But the race will resume when the track is clear. McLaren barely have time to finish putting that rear wing on.
They were cutting it. They basically had gotten one of the uprights taken care of. They were working on the second one, trying to get off the car with 10 minutes to go. And we're looking at them going, ooh, that's good to be close.
And they were still working on it with 1 minute to go, but they got it done. Restart, of course, behind the safety car. Lap 73, we restart. Sebastian Vettel, Fernando Alonso, great restart. And Jenson Button seemed to be sleeping. He fell back. He didn't keep up with the two.
No.
And
I think you it was a really good job by Vitaly, I mean by Sebastian Vettel to kind of slow the field down a little bit, coming down into Roscoe's, and that just basically gave him the ability to run up to the start finish line and kind of just
and of course
seal the deal.
Williams, with their bad luck, even though they were looking pretty strong on lap 74, Pastor Maldonado crashes. Lewis Hamilton is involved again.
Yep.
And it just doesn't end. This is on turn one. No safety car. This is the correct car that's cleared so fast.
Yeah, it's like we have the wreck, you know, and the other guys are already down to the hairpin at this point, and they're coming around like, wow, why are they going to get that, you know, like freaking out because are they going to be able to, you know, are they going to get that cleared? They're like, another safety car? Huh? And they're like 5 seconds away. And then as they come up the straight, there's nothing there.
Yeah.
It's like nothing happened.
Quality. And of course, on lap 75, it's announced that Lewis Hamilton and Pastor Maldonado are being investigated. Mark Webber is all over the back of Kamui Kobayashi. Lewis Hamilton is all over Mark Webber. And once again, I'm impressed Lewis Hamilton does not have enough damage to stop his race. So he has a lot of good luck as well in this Grand Prix.
Well, give credit to McLaren for building a car that's
somewhat
robust.
Solid. I agree. Lap 76, fast lap of the race. Fernando Alonso with a 116.931. It's Sebastian Vettel, Fernando Alonso, Button, Kobayashi, Webber, Hamilton, Sutil, Heidfeld, Rubinho, and Sebastian Buemi in the top 10. Mark Webber passes, leaving the tunnel. Kamui Kobayashi cuts the chicane and has to relinquish the position. Fast lap of the race on lap 17, it's Fernando Alonso with a 116.4. Then on the final lap, Sebastian Vettel puts in the fast lap of the race with a 116.267, but Mark Webber says, no, I will deny you, and he puts in the fast lap
Pips
of the race.
For no triple, no hat trick for you.
11.6234, so Mark Webber, keep up the good work. At least you get something, and finishing P4 isn't that bad, considering what happened in this race.
Yeah, exactly. I was a little disappointed in the whole thing. You know, happy for Sebastian that he gets his win, but a little sad because those last six or seven laps would have just been fantastic to watch with him trying to defend on tires that were pretty much gone.
It was still a fantastic race, and of course now Sebastian Vettel has won his first Monaco Grand Prix. He's won 5 out of 6 races in the 2011 season. He is dominating and now is 58 points ahead of Mr. Hamilton. So an outstanding job and a lot of frustration out there as well.
Yeah, a lot of people having a tough time. You know, credit to Webber for biding his time and waiting for a good opportunity to get past Kobayashi because he was behind him for quite some time. And they were talking a lot about the frustration quotient because he knows he's in a faster car. But he does finally wait until the right opportunity to get that extra point.
Yeah. And of course, all the drivers, they have to speak to the press after the races. I mean, they go into this area and all the press is there, and it's just part of their job. They, you know, you have to say something. You could say no comment if you want, but I think some of these,
they have to be available.
They have to be available. Thank you, Steven. That's part of the new rules. And I think it's a great rule. I like to hear from the drivers. Felipe Massa, He had a few things to say. Something about the FIA should issue more penalties against Lewis Hamilton. Massa says, he tried to pass me on the curbs when I didn't think it was possible to overtake. He was too aggressive. Then when I got to the tunnel, my car was damaged and I went on the dirty part of the track, hit the wall. What he did today was unbelievable. Not just with me, but with other drivers as well. Now, of course, Lewis Hamilton, lots of frustration, having a hard time, especially with the Sergio Perez drama in final qualifying in Q3, not being able to get in that great lap. So Lewis Hamilton, showing a lot of frustration, was speaking to the BBC at the end of the race, and he says, out of 6 races, I've been to the stewards 5 times. It's a joke. It's absolutely frickin' joke. When asked why he thought the stewards were paying so much attention to him, he says, well, maybe because I'm black. That's what Ali G says. I don't know. I was quite a lot quicker than Massa. I went up the inside and the guy turned so early and just turned into me. So I tried to go over the curb to avoid him and we were stuck together. And of course I get the penalty, which is usual. He held me up in qualifying and I get the penalty. He turned into me and I got the penalty. So Lewis Hamilton, I think he should take a little break.
I think Lewis needs to go back and look at the tape.
Well, he needs
and realize
to just calm
that he's
down.
Going into a hairpin. Of course he's going to turn into you.
Yeah, but your adrenaline is still pumping after the race. I think McLaren should have told him, but before you speak to the BBC, why don't you go over here and calm down a little bit? Yeah. Because everything you say is going to be in the press for weeks.
Well, lucky for him, it's only 2 weeks to Canada.
Exactly. Keep up the good work. Of course, terrible, terrible finish for Renault when they were hoping to fight at the front of the spear. And I don't know why they put this, but... Eric Boullier says that there's still hope that Robert Kubica may come back in 2011 to do some Friday testing.
I can see, but I don't see him getting into the race. I see it hard for him to get past the medical group of the FIA this year.
Dude, he hasn't been in the car, of course, since the accident at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And this car has gone through some development. And it would be good to get some Kubica feedback on where they stand. Because obviously, you know, and I know Heidfeld is a veteran. Vitaly's been there for a couple years now. Still, they need some Kubica stuff. As far as I'm concerned, that's just my thoughts. Quickly, some news on the Indy 500. Takuma Sato was the first retirement at the 500 after crashing out on lap 21. And of course, we'll have more on that on Motorsports Mondial in the weekday show from The King. And quickly in Le NASCAR, Kimi Raikkonen finished 27th on his nationwide series debut at Charlotte following a pit road penalty, damage to the front of the car, and having run most of the distance on the lead lap before that. So he did well, just had some
mishaps.
Some Lewis Hamilton bad luck. But, you know, he did so well in that first Truck Series outing, it was going to be hard to top that.
Yeah, or at least even match it, for that matter, because the step up to Nationwide is especially the number of quality drivers that are running in the Nationwide Series versus the Truck Series make a big difference.
Absolutely. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break because we've got a surprise. And we'll go into the wrap-up after this brief message.
Attention, music lovers. There's a website that will take you back to the music of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Check out coolalbumoftheday.com and relive some favorites. Every day, a new album is posted for your musical pleasure. There's everything from current hits to some off-the-wall titles. You'll find artists ranging from the Sex Pistols to Tom Waits. Something for everybody. So come visit coolalbumoftheday.com. That's coolalbumoftheday.com.
And now, the big surprise.
Friday, a Saturday is best. But never, never on a Sunday, a Sunday, a Sunday, cause that's my day of rest. Come any day.
Hello, listeners. My Connie Francis 45 is a broken record, Mr. Rogers. So here I am, working for boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen of F1 Figli Familia all over the Mondial this Domingo, also known as Sunday. Your thoughts on the fantastic race today?
It was exciting. It was lovely. I loved it. It would have been a little bit more exciting if we didn't get the red flag with six laps to go. But yet, and I learned a lot. I had no idea that they were allowed to change tires on the grid like that.
I also did not know, and that really killed the race for me, because I think if they had allowed the original tires, then probably Nando would have passed Vettel, or would have taken both of them out, and then Smooth Operator was also looking very feisty. But Hamilton is in a different world today.
Hamilton is in a different world, and Jenson Button did a good drive, and I was glad. Those three guys definitely deserved that podium. It was a great podium.
And three world champions.
Three world champions at Monaco.
Yeah.
It doesn't get better than that, Naz.
Yeah. Yes, and there was a tremendous finish to the Indy 500 also, which we will talk on the midweek show. But anyway, Monaco was once called a sunny place for shady people. I don't think they were talking about you.
No.
You're as straight as they come, right?
Absolutely.
But today we will talk about the racy people and look at their history in a segment called Motorsports Memories from Monte Carlo. And now that you are paying me overtime zeros, I think we'll do this as a regular after every Formula One race.
A feature.
Yes, sir. With your express verbal consent. The very first Monaco Grand Prix was organized by Anthony Noges, I don't know what how this name is pronounced, N-O-G-H-E-S, in 1929. Can you shed some light on the last name, please? N-O-G-H-E-S?
I think you just did fine. Yes,
you think so?
Absolutely.
There were three variations there, but anyway, thanks. And this race in 1929 was won by William Grover Williams in a Bugatti, and I'm sure you know what that is.
French car.
Exactly. Other famous pre-war winners were Italian legend Tazio Nuvolari in 1932 in an Alfa Romeo, probably entered by Scuderia Ferrari, will not surprise me. Another Alfa winner in 1934 was Guy Moll. This is an interesting character in motor racing. He was from Algeria of French heritage. He was killed in a Ferrari during the Coppa Acerbo race in Pescara, and was named one of three drivers by Enzo Ferrari who excited him for their driving and determination. Other two would be no surprise to motor racing fans, Nuvolari and Gilles Villeneuve. This kid was rated very highly and he died very young. In 1936, the race was won by Rudolf Caracciola of Germania in a Mercedes. Surprise, surprise. And his winning trophy from the Tripoli Grand Prix is on display at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum, which quite a few European journalists are very surprised to see when they go to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum. Frankly, I was also. That's not where you expect a trophy from the Tripoli Grand Prix. In 1950, Monaco was one of seven championship races, including the Indy 500, which used to be part of the program, in the inaugural season of Formula One World Championship. And the race was the first F1 victory for the maestro from Argentina, Señor Juan Manuel Fangio, in an Alfa Romeo. And actually, this when I did the very first calendar, the first theme was Maiden Wins, and there was a picture of, which I got from LAT of England, of him making a turn at Monaco, and that picture has been shown on, I mean, it's a famous picture, that's why I, you know, used it. They show that on Speed TV quite a bit also. The 1955 race is famous for Alberto Ascari going off the road and landing in the harbor in his Lancia D50. He survived this only to be killed 4 days later at Monza, a few days later, I think it was 4 days later, the following week, while testing Eugenio Castellotti's Ferrari. And Eugenio Castellotti was another Italian driver. He was killed at the Modena Aero Autodrome. And he also, I was reading about him, won the Sebring 12 hours sometime in the 50s. Jack Brabham of Australia scored his first Grand Prix win in Monte Carlo in the 1959 event in his green rear-engine Cooper. He is one of the few drivers to have won his first Grand Prix and World Championship in the same year. 2 years later, which would be 1961, Sir Stirling Moss scored what is generally regarded his finest win, driving a Rob Walker-entered Lotus to victory over shark-nosed Ferraris of Richie Ginther, Phil Hill, and Wolfgang von Trips. In this race, there were three Americans, all from LA area, as Dan Gurney was fifth in his Porsche. Now imagine, in the early 60s, we have three Americans in the top five of a Grand Prix, and this day and age, we don't see any Americans. Sad. 1963 to 65, three in a row for Graham Hill. Damon's dad would win two more times in Monte Carlo for a total of five wins. Very impressive. The F1 debut of McLaren racing cars came here in 1966, of course, Bruce driving. Tragedy struck in Monaco in 1967 when Italian driver Lorenzo Bandini was killed in a fiery accident, very sad accident there, while chasing Denny Holm for the lead. And Denny Holm from New Zealand went on to win the race. 1970, one of the most amazing finishes. And by the way, most of these races I'm mentioning are on YouTube.
Everything's on YouTube.
Yeah, and some of them are pretty interesting, a lot of commentary and good photography. So please check it out if you have a moment. So 1970, one of the most amazing finishes in the Monaco race, Jack Brabham in his own car all set for victory on the final lap till the final corner where he made a mistake and allowed Jochen Rindt to take an unexpected win. He was driving the older Lotus 49 then. And Brabham years later would say, I am entitled to one mistake in my career. 1972, first win for the driver, final win for the team. And this, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine. This one day will be a theme, first and last. What is happening over the course of the history of Formula One, a lot of victories have been either the first for the driver and the last for the team, or the other way around. So this was, it was like Pani's case was like that too. 72, it was Jean-Pierre Beltoise. It was his first win, and as it turned out, first and only win. And it was the final victory for BRM. And BRM is the team that was very famous, British Racing Motors. Graham Hill's first victory, Jackie Stewart's first victory came in BRM's. 1978, now this race I remember very, very well. This is like the pinnacle of my initial foray into Formula One as a fan. First win after numerous second places. This guy was on the, I think, like the Nick Heidfeld program. Came in second race after race. And of course, we're talking about Patrick Depailler of Clermont-Ferrand, home base of Michelin also. And he was driving a Tyrrell. 1979, victory for Ferrari driver Jody Scheckter from South Africa. And his son was racing at Indy today, Tomas. 1980, first win for an Argentine driver in Monte Carlo since Fangio in 1957, when Carlos Reutemann wins for Williams. So that was good. 1981, Gilles Villeneuve from Canada wins for Ferrari. Popular win, obviously, French-speaking driver in a French-speaking area. 1982, first Grand Prix win for Riccardo Patrese in his Brabham as one driver after another drops out while leading the final lap. And there were so many drivers led and could have won. Prost, Didier Pironi, even André de Chazres and Derek Daly had a chance to win their first Grand Prix. Most people ran out of petrol, gas, and Derek Daly, I think something went wrong with his car. 1984, heavy rain and heavy performance from both Ayrton Senna and Stefan Beloff. Controversial decision to red flag the race by Jackie Ickx. This is always mentioned when they talk about the 84 race. Robbed Senna of a great win in only his sixth F1 start in a Tolman Turbo. And you know, I'd just like to throw some information which may not be relevant, but somehow it is connected. Tolman, of course, was Ted Tolman, an English guy who built his fortune with delivering cars to car dealership, you know, auto transport. And one of his sons was killed a few years ago during a botched robbery attempt in front of his house or in his house in South Africa. So that was not good. 1987, the Senna dynasty starts at Monaco, Monte Carlo, whatever you want to call it, with victory in a Lotus. And of course, he would have been there many times. 1992, are you ready for this one? Take five for Senna in Monte Carlo, but only after race leader R. Nige had to stop for tires late in the race. Tires were always his problem. Remember Adelaide 86? Mansell mounted a huge challenge for the lead as he had won the first five races of the season and was looking for his first victory at Monte Carlo. This is how exciting it got in the world of Murray Walker and James Hunt.
And Senna actually pulls away a little bit, last lap.
You can see how careful Senna is in the exit for Raskas. He doesn't hurry through it, he gets the car pointed, he gets on the car very early. That's protected him each time. And Senna through the Casino Square, down the hill to Mirabeau is an important point, but he's got just enough breathing space there. Nigel Mansell, and it's going to be from the chicane onwards. No passing here around the 48. Off into the tunnel. Senna early on the power, I'm sure.
It's only the left here, the right again, the left, and into the rash pass. And I do not see how Mansell, even Nigel Mansell on fresh tyres, is going to be able to get by. He can't. Ayrton Senna has won the Monaco Grand Prix most certainly as he exits the Raskas. Mansell closes, but it's too late, and Ayrton Senna wins at Monaco for the fifth time in 6 years.
Thank you for listening. Cheers and ciao from Cali.
Thank you, Nas. Thanks for another outstanding surprise segment there. Thanks for coming. I know you're a busy man on the weekend with the barbecue and the girls and the big plasma TV. And
Wow. Some of the items are missing.
I understand.
But I appreciate the faith and confidence. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Michael, sadly, you were cycling us two at the end and not driving whilst the other cars were. Just tell us what the problem was out there.
Well, we had several issues. I mean, we had, firstly, at the start, we went, instead of going forward, we went into anti-stall program. That meant the car goes to neutral instead of driving. And we have to analyze why this happened, but nevertheless, the race was compromised by that moment. Then I had a touch with Hamilton. The nose was broken, lost quite a significant amount of downforce. Tires, for that reason, went off much quicker, early pit stop, so one-to-one had happened. But once we changed the nose and we had a fresh set of tire, the pace at that moment was reasonable. I understood from my engineer we were kind of fourth quickest car in this moment. But then, obviously, the race was highly compromised. I tried to get by Nico because he was reasonably slow, being on hard tires in this moment, struggling with the car. And then we got a fire in the airbox that melted probably some cables, and then that meant stopping the race.
But whilst you were going, you looked like you were enjoying it. Some nice moves at the hairpin.
Yeah, I had some. I've been overtaken because my tire has been down, but then obviously later on I recovered from that, and had some nice moves with Nico, with Barrichello, but then unfortunately too short.
Okay, let's go right to the wrap up with 50 words on Monaco Grand Prix or 50 mots du Grand Prix de Monaco. Stephen?
Ye writes, that was the most exciting Monaco since 92. Probably. Completely gutted that the safety cars robbed Jensen of a victory. It's a stupid rule to let them change tires during the red flag. It robbed us of a potentially thrilling ending.
From Kehe Sin, Weber rues Red Bull's pit stop screw up. Hamilton thinks he's in a demolition derby, and Vettel finds its business as usual thanks to the safety car, so nothing new on that score.
From Monza Gorilla, I pretty much agree with Ye, except that maybe that Alonso also had a chance of winning. Changing tires, fixing wings, etc. during a red? ? Ridiculous! The last 8 laps were a joke and a complete letdown.
From Iceman, oh yeah, it's the 4 Vs, baby, as it's Vinny, Vidi, Vici, and Vettel through the streets of Monte Carlo. World champions find podium slots after chaotic race with safety cars, wildly differing tire strategies, and a late race restart. Mercifully, no driver was seriously hurt following a spat of weekend crashes.
And Kit writes, epic battle to at the top, but Vettel manages to soak up the pressure yet again, finishing ahead of a tenacious Alonso. Sutil's run of bad luck at Monaco continues. The tightest circuit in the calendar provides us with the most retirements of the season once again, while overtaking proves to be as impossible as was expected.
From Neon Zapper, what a beautiful city. Near the end, Alonso was stepping all over Vettel's worn heels. But a red flag ended what Jensen Button considered fun to watch from P3. RBR needs to show some love for Weber, and I was as impressed with Kobayashi as I was disappointed with Hamilton. On to Canada. And finally, from Interruptor, Hamilton needs to look into a mirror next time he looks for a culprit. Last weekend, it was Schumi and the Toro Rosso guys in quali. It was his team's strategy. Then Massa and Maldonado, 20-second penalty is the only joke here. Doesn't make any difference to him. So there you have it. Another outstanding weekend. Nass, a few final comments.
Yeah, you know, this Hamilton thing is, all I can say is, whether you're racing or on a street car, in a street car, a passing driver has the responsibility. And this is Monte Carlo, and this is not Sepang, you know. And I've noticed that all great drivers, they do share some traits, you know, great talent. They are real bad losers, and they are never wrong. Senna was like that. Schumacher was like that. Hamilton is showing those traits. And remember last year, 3 races to go, how antsy and cat on a hot tin roof Sebastian Vettel was. And I think Hamilton is like a declawed tiger. He knows he can do the job. He just doesn't have the tools.
Yeah.
But, you know, these things will pass and we'll move on.
He will mature.
Yeah.
He's still very, very young.
Hopefully, Pussycat Doll will give him some of her claws.
I'm sure that's going to happen.
That will get Sebastian Vettel some cat scratch fever.
Keep up the good work, Nasser. I want to thank everybody for listening. Stay tuned for the midweek show. Of course, we'll have Motorsports Mondial with all the Indy 500 highlights.
GP2 World Series by Renault and more.
And
much, much more. Oh, talking of NASCAR, have you told our listeners what happened when we applied for NASCAR credential? I think it's a funny story. You should, especially on a weekend.
It is. It was a funny story. I did email Infineon Raceway and talk to their press people. And
no, not Infineon. It's the International Speedway Corporation. Or
oh, yeah.
It is.
SMI.
Speedway Motors and some, yes. Whatever.
But they said they looked at the F1 Weekly website and sent me an email saying that they didn't see very much NASCAR coverage.
And then my idea was to let them know that, you know, ours is a podcast, but then we thought, you know, maybe that's not a good idea.
Exactly. But, you know, we could send them some of our old points discussions on the NASCAR system.
Or we could send them the snippets about the missing driver suit.
Yeah, that was
good. Oh, yeah. That will get us VIP passes.
The suit was exciting.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, we posted an 1-800 number and everything.
Absolutely. And it was recovered thanks to our help.
It was recovered. So anyway, there you have it. Nas, keep up the good work. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Good job as well. And I have a funny feeling that Desiree might have a few comments that I might post in this podcast. So there you have it. Good night and see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Good night.